late start. I just want to introduce myself for those of you who don't know me. I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And this is a new group, as you may or may not know. Is this our second time meeting? Paul, yeah, second time. You guys filled out a survey or things that you were interested in, and that's how we came up with this topic. You have your chair, who is great, Paul Grosch, and his, assistant, or not assistant, his co-chair, but not officially co-chair yet. I'm not sure, Noah, but Noah and Paul are both from JFCS Philly. And if you can just right-click on your name and put in your community, that would be terrific, so we know where everyone's coming in from. And Paul, Noah, take it away.
Sure, great. Thanks for joining, everyone. We had asked for a list of topics that people were interested in talking about, and this is one that kind of came up near the top. And it's something that's been, top of mind for me for quite some time. Really, the question is, how do we effectively evaluate case management or care management? I think, my experience with this has been that, when we're doing care management, people come with such a variety of presenting problems that it's really hard to, find that one thing that we can say, this is what we're going to measure. This is how we're going to measure impact. And a lot of times we end up trying to measure treatment goal attainment or goal attainment. And I have been finding that more and more this is unfavorable to funders. They want to know more specifically what it is that what is the change that you make? So just throwing it out there, does anyone have any initial thoughts? Does anyone have a way that they've found particularly effective in managing case or evaluating case management or care management? Does everyone have care management programs where they are?
Yeah, well, we have one that we just finished. Every year we have three long-term care programs, a Holocaust program, a case management, and a private case management, private pay. We send out a survey to the people that we think are appropriate and can answer a survey, basically asking them, these services, does your case manager agree with what you're doing? Do you understand what the program's about? And do you feel it's allowed you to stay independently in your house? This year it worked out really well because of the usually we have the case managers hand it to appropriate clients with a stamped envelope. But this year we mailed them and it worked out much better. We got a 75% response rate. So it really worked out well.
So really in the end, you're measuring kind of client satisfaction with the service, as well as it sounded like another outcome in there, like ability to remain independent. Is that right?
Yeah, if it's allowed the people to remain independent in their homes, right?
I think we do something similar in terms of older adult case management. We also have a program for older adults and Holocaust survivors where we define our success as, not moving to a higher level of care or remaining independent in their own homes, aging in place, however you want to describe the outcome. So in that case, I think it's a little bit more clear. We have really clearly defined, this is what we do. I think where we struggle a little bit is in care management for not older adults, for younger adults that are coming. Maybe they have mental illness, maybe they have problems with housing, maybe they have problems with finance. So again, they're coming in for these myriad of different reasons. We've created some of our own scales around housing stability, utilities stability, and food stability. But they're really kind of made up measures that, are homeless to not homeless and everything, and iterations in between. Have you worried about food? Have you not worried about food? But we've really struggled to get the care managers themselves to embrace that because it doesn't really feel like it captures what it is that they're doing. And we were just having a discussion about this today. When your evaluation tools are incongruent with what the person that's actually doing the work feels like their role is or what that is that they're doing, it becomes just something that they have to do, not something that they really want to do or are invested in, or is even really very helpful to them. So I wonder, you know, those of you that are either doing case management or have staff or evaluating staff that are doing case management, what is it that you're measuring, or and what is it that they would like to see measured? Has anyone asked that question?
What do you mean? You mean specific things they're measuring?
I mean, like, you know, when it's not necessarily older adults, when it's not, you know, aging in place, like what are the kind of the components of case management or the service that you're providing that are actually being measured, and how does that relate to what is the staff, or how do the staff feel about it?
Well, that's the big question. Go on, Laura.
I can share that our staff get excited about measuring things like connection to permanent housing, and then the length of time that someone's able to stay in that permanent housing versus, say, a hospital or homelessness, because that really reflects their support and efforts of the person served. And then also some of the linkages or the connections to other services, like we're looking at how many people are connected to primary care and Medicaid, and looking to see if that equates with some better outcomes for people if they have both of those things. So we're just getting started. Another thing that I'm really interested in is the person served and how do they define their progress, and trying to think a little bit beyond the satisfaction of the service. And we've been looking, and this has been around for a long time, we haven't implemented it yet, and maybe there's something better to use, but we're looking at the CDC's Healthy Days module, where, you know, it's an assessment of someone's kind of physical and mental health and in a survey format. I don't know if anyone else has used that, but it's from the person's perspective of how their health is. And that seems to me to maybe to be a start at getting at, are we helping someone feel healthier and better and more connected? So,
is that something you can share with the member?
Sure,
here?
I'll put the link in right now.
Okay, great. And I can also then put it on the members only resource library for those of you.
Yeah, and if anyone else is, that's great. If anyone else is interested in this, we had planned to implement it last year. Of course, that didn't happen. But if anyone else is interested, we're looking to pilot this, and it would be great to work on it with someone.
Does it have like a number, a summary, or some?
Yes.
Just individual comments?
Yes, it's a survey with numbers and scoring.
Hold it up, yeah. Ruth, did you have something to say?
Yeah, hi, Ruth Olcon with St. Paul, Minnesota, and I'm here with my colleague Jill, who really is the knowledgeable one. Jill's our Director of Aging and Disability Services, but this is just such an interesting conversation for us to be a part of because of our own journey. We are embarking on a really comprehensive program evaluation across our whole agency. And just today, I believe, one of our teams is working on the crux of what we're talking about here, which is developing logic models for all of our programs, including our care coordination. So again, a logic model, which we all know, but it's this idea of what do you put in and what's going to come out, right? And the reason that we decided to pursue that approach, it's really resonating listening to the conversation today, is because there are so many audiences. Right. So, Paul, you talked about this. What do our staff care about? What do our clients care about? What do our funders and contractors care about? What does our community care about? And what we're seeking is a way, I'll let you know if we pull this off, but we're happy to share any of our tools. We're seeking a way to really weave all of these things together so that we have a coherent narrative about what is the impact in a way that's accessible, right? And then you know, there's lots of ROI around helping people age in place. Or we also serve folks with disabilities, live in community, live in the least restrictive, right? We don't need to prove that. There's been tons of research on that, but we can utilize that to tell our story. We're excited to share our learning more about the tools that we're using rather than the outcomes, right? Because that I think it's more tools or approach that might be of interest. Jill, what would you add anything?
I would just say that hopefully the tools are going to prove the outcomes though, right? The tools that you use.
Right. Right. So right now we're really setting up the models about what are the outcomes that we think are important and likely, and then move on to data collection. And by the end of the year, hope to have findings. So Jill, what would you add anything for our colleagues?
I think that's a good summary of kind of where we're hoping to head towards. I think I can comment a little bit about like in the past, at least since my 5.5 years, most of what we have done is just been more around client satisfaction and surveying the clients, the recipients of our care coordination case management to ask them questions around, do you feel like your needs are being met? Do you feel like your case manager has, you know, listened and heard you and helped you get connected to the resources you're seeking and really based it around the client's individual account of how satisfied they've been with what they've received from our staff.
So these outcomes are all things that you have made up, nothing that's standardized?
Not really. I mean, in the past.
Have y'all ever used this?
No.
Okay, it's nothing but outcome measures that are standardized, and we used it for several of our programs. There's two volumes, and it's a very interesting compilation of all kinds of instruments, but they're all standardized and they're all free. You know, you don't have to pay.
Oh, you're talking about measurement tools.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Beth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. So a couple of things, like I think in the past, JFC Philly has tried to do two things, like do the client satisfaction, but then also do some, you know, whether it be depression or anxiety or homelessness or you know, so have some of the, you know, what did we achieve and then how did the clients feel about it? Interestingly enough, Laura, what we're sort of working on is also from the client's perspective. Has anyone heard of PROMIS tools, PROMIS? It's patient reported outcome measurement information systems or something like that.
Yeah.
Thank you. So these are free tools that are all from the patient's perspective. So instead of having a clinician or a case manager fill out an assessment of depression with the client and have it be very academic and from the clinician's point of view, it's how is the depression impacting the client's life? And there's lots
where
of these.
Where do you get them?
I can drop a, or Noah, can you drop a
link? Yeah, I'll put a link in the chat.
So this has sort of been our move in Philly across the board, not just in case management and counseling in our other programs as well, is, you know, instead of doing, you know, the geriatric depression, you know, the academic tool that you can find in all the literature, you know, we switched to these patient reported outcomes and really have found some significant increases in staff willingness to use, right? So when they're asking the client how they feel about something or how that it's impacting their life and they can measure change, that's been much more appealing to clients, but also or for the staff, but also for clients. And you know, it doesn't feel as invasive, perhaps is the right word. It's really asking them how they feel about something, not putting a score on top of them. And the nice thing about PROMIS tools is that they can be aggregated. So there's this toolkit, all these different tools, but Noah is able to put those tools together. So it really becomes individualized treatment and individualized measurement, depending on what it is that the client is presenting with. So we've switched towards sort of that way of thinking. It sounds sort of similar to that CDC thing, Laura, that you were referencing, but this can be adapted for a wide range of different interventions. So I don't know.
In a lot of cases, it's actually eased the paperwork burden for staff. So it's not just being able to, you know, be more specific to what you're measuring with the client, and often using that as part of treating a client and interacting with the client. But it's a lighter, you know, paperwork burden. And then on the back end, we have a much greater, much more robust ability to like aggregate and look at overall, like what's care management progress this quarter in this program in care management on the whole.
I dropped the link in the chat. If you click on the search and view measures button at the top, you can actually search all the tools they have in their database. And you know, they have a lot of 16 question versions and then short form 8 questions, short form 4 questions. So a lot of these surveys are also, they've been tweaked to be a lot pretty, you know, light survey burden in terms of, you know, fatigue or whatever. And there are also some for different audiences. I know there are some like youth specific ones with regard to depression and anxiety. It's really helped us to kind of, empower social workers in how they're interacting with clients and have the client be part of that process of how are we measuring their care management.
Did you have to do training for your staff? It's free.
They're free. I mean, there is like an organization for Promise that you can become a member of, and they do offer trainings, but they're really simple tools.
Interesting.
Like Noah said, the ones that we're using are usually between 4 and 6 questions. And they come with metrics, and the ability, Noah, correct me if I'm saying anything that's not actually true. And they come with what is meaningful change, right? So if you do it once and do it twice, do it 3 times, do it 4 times, what is the number that needs to change in order for it to be significant or meaningful, I think is the word they use, not significant.
Yeah, so it's like every tool has a scale that is then normalized so you can compare different tools. And then there are kind of thresholds for, okay, when a tool passes a certain, you know, if there's a change in 1 point, is that meaningful? What about a change in 5 points? So there's then information on if you're trying to evaluate, you know, and so this is something we did, you know, what is people's mental state as the pandemic starts? Okay, we're seeing a lot of regression. Well, what if we look at quote unquote meaningful change? Did people, you know, regress past a certain threshold, or that were they able to effectively maintain their general, you know, anxiety, depression, various other things we measure. So, yes.
How often do you give them these measures?
We do it quarterly. I believe it's generally, unless some of our programs maybe a little less frequently, but as a general rule of thumb, quarterly.
I believe they're quarterly or as needed. So if there's a significant change in the person's life that necessitates perhaps running the instrument, that they do it.
Are they emailed to the client, or how does the client get the
survey? Yeah, how do you collect the data? I was curious about that as well.
So silver lining from the pandemic, what we've been able to do is we use Microsoft 365 platform. And so they have their survey tool forms in there. And there are ways to build a form survey, and when a survey is submitted, it can populate a spreadsheet somewhere, which then feeds a dashboard in Power BI. And so we've really tried to harness the power of the connectivity of that. And also once it's set up, you know, I don't need to do anything. So it really helps to automate.
What about I mean, not everyone does email.
So they do it by proxy. So then the social worker will ask the questions, and those are entered into either forms. Are they all entered in forms, Noah, or are some of them into our EHR?
I think they're all done in forms. And also for our People Living with Disabilities program, sometimes we specifically interview clients because there's concern about, you know, client understanding of questions. So it's, you know, in spots, it's not perfect. But yeah, so sometimes it's proxy interview and then a social worker enters that form. But we also track them. We collect them through forms. We also track them in our EHR system. So, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed when I was looking on the site, it looks like they have metrics for like your research. Are they able to share like national statistics and kind of so you can compare how your population is testing versus how people across the nation are testing? Or is that kind of like the membership piece or?
Yeah, but there are norms. So, right. Okay. So like there are, you know, a certain score on depression suggests, you know, further inquiry, but no idea.
Yeah, there are. Right. That's the interesting thing. Some of the research that's been done is kind of broadly for the toolkit, but you can then apply it to like each tool in the toolkit. But there, so there's the threshold for meaningful change. But there's also like clinical ranges for groups of tools. So like for depression, what is like, I forget what they call it, but it's like, what is normal? What is like of concern? What is, you know, high, whatever. So they kind of define these ranges for each tool of like in isolation, if I just get a score, what does this mean? As opposed to, you know, change over time.
Just wondering if you could use it where you said, you know, like across the nation, people score at this level on depression. But when we're working specifically with this specific population in Pittsburgh or in Philly, we're seeing it at a higher rate than the national average. And then maybe utilize that to go and talk to potential funding to increase resources. But I don't know if that's what they're talking about when they say stuff for your research.
I think a lot of these are designed very much, you know, kind of in the vein of every person is unique. It's very much designed as a, what is a person, an individual's baseline? How does that individual change over time? You know, there are those clinical ranges. I'm not exactly sure what is and is not out there as far as like comparison data, but we definitely use it more in that like, how does a client change over time? So it's how does a client compare to themselves? Paul, do you have any?
No, I mean, it's really, it's patient reported, right? So it's all about what is the client's perception of whatever it is that is ailing them. So that's been an interesting development for us. And the other interesting point was the logic models. Ruth, all of our programs have logic models. So we've been working on this for a number of years. And we've incorporate the measures into the logic model. So if there's a particular outcome that relates, our indicator becomes the score on the PROMIS tool. And we annotate that directly into the logic model. So if you pick up our logic model, and you see that we're, you know, reducing depression or whatever outcome it is that we're trying, you can see right on there where it is that we're getting or how we're measuring our success in that domain. And then those get dashboarded out, the results on, as Noah was saying, it's sort of an automated process at this point for those that are entered in through forms.
Just another thing to add in, there are other toolkits on that website. But some of them do require like in-person training. So PROMIS kind of had, at least for us, the lowest barrier to entry in terms of implementing it.
Maybe you could train us on PROMIS. Haha.
Well, because it's so easy, I'm happy to.
Sarah, you had said something in the chat. You collect statistical information from clients?
That's actually what I, yeah, that's kind of what I was asking them about, is if you can kind of look at it from like a national perspective to see if your community's in more need than kind of on the national level to indicate, you know, trying to seek more resources to support your community in specific ways.
So this has been like a kind of a hard transition for me in some ways, because I'm with you, Sarah, like we used to like do like, you know, falls. I don't know if we still do falls and hospitalization when we're talking about older adults and things that we can norm to Medicare data to say like our population is doing slightly better than the average 65-year-old or slightly worse if we're trying to make that case. But we've really made the shift away from that type of measurement and really to this more person-centered approach. You know, and I struggle with it as, you know, an evaluation, as a data guy. I kind of want the hard facts, not so much just the, you know, it seemed at first like the patient's perception could be wrong, like, right? Or, you know, it's not a hard enough or more a concrete enough metric to actually measure and to see change. But the more we got into it, the more it seemed more in line with sort of social work values in some way in person-centered approaches to treatment or intervention. You know, who cares what their score is? Actually, what really matters is how they feel about their life and if their life is moving in a positive trajectory as far as they are concerned, or, you know, they're the masters of their own experience sort of idea. So yeah, we still do client satisfaction. We still have funders that require that sort of some more simplistic, how did you feel about your service? Did you like us? Do you not like us? We've found those to be less than helpful for the most part. We kind of, you know, if they're done with a social worker, we get lots of glowing reviews, you know, and they tend to be overly positive and perhaps not realistic to actual sentiment, or maybe we just do a really, really great job. I'm not sure.
Paul, social, I mean, satisfaction, that's just a thing. They just always, whatever you do, it's fine, but that's everyone's problem. They tend to be positive. I mean, that's a known vulnerability of the tool.
Right.
Right. Okay. Whatever it is.
And our federation still requires us to ask that question.
So Lisa, could I ask a question from the network's perspective? I mean, I'm just curious about, one of the things I appreciate about the network is this opportunity to share and learn from each other. And that's really powerful. And I know that's the focus right now, but I'm also curious about if, from the network's perspective, is there some utility to having some, I don't know, universal narrative across all of the...
Oh gosh, we thought about that for right? so long with our IT group too, determining, you know, how to measure that. But everyone in their own unique agencies has different ideas for what a teenager is or what a senior is or what they want to measure. And so it's so hard to do that, even though I do think that's a goal, but it's not come into fruition yet. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to have a committee to figure out what it is that we want to measure, because we could measure anything, right?
Right.
But we can't measure everything probably.
Sort of a secret.
You have an idea? You want to be on the committee to try to do that? Because I know it's something we've always talked about, but it's just hard to do.
It's been sort of my fantasy that out of this group, maybe we could find one thing that we could, it doesn't have to be a big thing. Just one thing that we could try to collaborate on and sort of try and measure the same type of thing and be able to show strength in numbers in the network.
Yeah. I mean, I come
to get money.
Well, that, Lisa, right on. I mean, that's truly my interest, is what would be helpful in pursuit of funding, really, to be on, right? Like what could be leveraged in the advocacy efforts that the network does on our behalf, and with the with incredible power of numbers. I don't know, and And it is so hard. But I'm intrigued by this idea of one thing, right? Because of the work of the Jewish Family Service Agencies, mm-hmm. older adults can stay in their homes, and that saves this country. I mean, you could do this, right?
Absolutely.
Saves us $1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000 know.
I think it's a great idea. I think it's something we've definitely thought about. I think this new workforce initiative that we are implementing will have some national data that we can use across Jewish vocational service agencies. But I do think that there's so much potential with, you know, with what, whether it's with seniors, with people with disabilities, Holocaust survivors, you know, single parents. I mean, you could name anything and really try to measure it. So maybe, Paul, that is something that we could think about.
It was part of my vision for this group to try and find that thing. I mean, an age in place for older adults seems to be a very common thing that we all talk about. I'm sure we all measure it slightly differently or have slightly different definitions of what it means to age in place or how we quantify success when it comes to that.
Right, unless we came up with what we determine and then ask everyone to do it as an aside, in addition to what they're doing, but not, right? Well, something to certainly fantasize about. And
curiosity, what data support systems do people use? Like, are people using Apricot, something homemade?
Probably a million answers. We use Apricot.
You use Apricot, okay.
Not super
just
happily.
Just moved to Salesforce.
Just moved to Salesforce.
People use Salesforce. Social solutions. Yeah.
There's
been a lot of movement towards Salesforce. I think they've really pushed aggressively to get more into this market. We use something called Credible Behavioral Health as our EHR. But quite honestly, most of our evaluation work goes through Office 365 products in terms of Microsoft Business Intelligence, SharePoint, and Forms. Is really how we've tried to bring as many things as we can into that. So Noah doesn't lose his mind in keeping track of a million different data sources.
I'm wondering what East Bay, Robin, what do you all in East Bay do? And we haven't heard from JFNCS Boston. Do you have...
I'm Barbara from JFNCS Boston. We use Salesforce. We just moved to Salesforce from Social Solutions.
But so in terms of this whole conversation and measuring.
Use across the agency, and we have four major divisions. So older adults, early relationship supports and new families, disabilities, and community services. We have agency goal categories across the agency that we work through that are kind of in common, you know, as each case management system has developed. And then there can be behind that, you know, each kind of specific program's possible goal categories. We've got that tied into our case notes now. So we can eventually start measuring things like dosage. But it's nice because you can look both within a program, but also within a client, kind of how they're progressing through goals. Some programs have quarterly reviews of goals with clients. Some it's kind of goals open until it's done. So we also do surveys depending upon the program, if it seems worth it. I lead that effort. And a lot of the surveys we're doing are really talking about kind of what we hope to achieve with clients and kind of getting their feedback. So it's kind of beyond the satisfaction levels.
Are you satisfied with the evaluation tools you have? Do you think they're successful?
I think we can always be looking and growing. I mean, what you were talking about sounds really promising. Going through the whole transferring one case management system to another, I think that's kind of wiped out the staff for probably at least another year.
Yeah.
Before we say, hey, how about this tool?
How are the goals determined?
We through service planning with the clients. So the client really is individual. So they really have their individual goal. Then it's set, you know, behind the scenes to a goal category.
I see.
Yeah. So the categories, there's probably 12 or 13, but things like health and well-being, benefits, social connections, housing, food. So some are, you know, real concrete, where others are more not quite as concrete.
What does that look like? What does that look like on the reporting end? What does it look like on the reporting end? Things like what do you say, like, clients achieve this level of percentage?
We can say, like, you know, 64% of clients this year, you know, within a program. Like, if there's 174 clients, X number achieved a goal this year, those categories, the others are still making progress on that goal. Because some clients can work for a few years on goals, you know, on a goal. And others can be, particularly if it's like a benefit, they've applied for it, they've gotten it. So you could track over time, was it kind of a benefits goal, kind of people needing that benefits stabilization when they come in, mm-hmm. and then moving on to other categories.
And have you found funders have been receptive to the idea of, like, mm-hmm. personal goal attainment?
Yep. So far. And I actually had a question for you guys. The clinicians you work with, are they receptive to kind of this process, you know, the PROMISE tool, and how are they using it? Are they reviewing it before client visits? Are there alerts if someone's score drops dramatically?
Noah can answer the last part a little bit more specifically. I'd say there's a mix. We just had a meeting. We have some new counseling staff, and I asked them, like, and they're honest. Some are like, I do it because I have to. And others, actually we had one that was kind of a really big insight. You know, they were working with a client with depression, and, you know, the client kept reporting that they were fine. And then, you know, they did the tool, and the tool really showed significant depression. So, they're able to use that to talk to the client, like, you know, you're saying you're fine, but, you know, when we do this tool. And so, I mean, there's been successes like that. In terms of the drops, some of our dashboards, are meant for the clinicians themselves to use. So they have, like, you know, if they haven't received an assessment in a certain amount of time, they'll pop up on a list on the dashboard. Or Noah, do we have some that are significant change indicators?
Yeah, we actually, so, like, we have our kind of overall metrics, and then it's like list of clients who have shown meaningful regression on a tool. So, and it's actually kind of, that oftentimes is what engages staff with dashboards that we found is okay, great. Overall numbers, they are important. They should care about them abstractly, but to be able to say, here's something actionable, like here's a client showing regression, like what's, you know, someone to investigate, that ends up being, you know, it's like, we don't want negative results, but where we have them, they're easily identified, you know. So it's a long-winded way of saying yes.
How about you, Robin? I know we talked, right, you and I, a while ago now, and you were just starting out. And what progress have you made, and how are you doing there?
Right now, I'm still trying to get a lay of the land about what it is that we are utilizing. We do have some tools, but they're separate by separate departments. And we've been in a process for a while of identifying and looking to move towards a new electronic health record system. And so I want to make sure that as we do that, we're really looking at some of these questions simultaneously. But I would say we're still in early stages. I will also just put in a plug for this idea of one thing that cuts across as many agencies as possible that we could look at in the aggregate, both because it tells a compelling story for the sector, but also because it's a great way to introduce a promising practice. And sort of lowering the barriers to entry for other agencies to kind of pull together. And imagine if every 2 to 3 years we introduced another, right? How far we might get. I also think that sometimes it's like the big agencies that have systems in place that everyone's like, well, we could never do that in our shop. But it's sometimes the much smaller organizations that are a little bit more nimble or agile and can adopt one piece that we can learn a ton from one another. It kind of levels the playing field for who feels like they can have a seat at the table in this conversation. Mm-hmm. So we're obviously have been around a long time and are pretty like mid-size agency. And right now we're looking overall at the, how do we break out of our silos from our different program and service areas? And I think that common evaluation tools for inside our agency is one tool to unlock that question.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. So one thing that we've done in that aspect of de-siloing has been looking at a particular issue as opposed to a program. So looking at mental health across a bunch of different programs, looking at food insecurity across a bunch of different programs, and sort of putting our outcomes together to see what our overall impact was that. And it has led to, you know, new programs, because once people start working together, they're like, oh, you do that too? Well, we do that. Maybe we should do this together. As well as just an ability to show a greater impact in the community. So it caused COVID helped us in some ways get over ourselves a little bit and start to work together in different ways. And looking at those logic models and dashboards across issues as opposed to programs was helpful. Mm-hmm.
I really appreciated joining this group today. I'm from JVS in Detroit, and for the size and longevity of our agency, we are in the stone ages in regards to this stuff. And so I'm just sitting and listening to everything that you have and taking great notes. So, you know, we collect a lot of this stuff, but it's so manual. We're still doing satisfaction surveys on paper. And that's why I was asking how you collected the data. And Noah, I'm really intrigued by what you said. We actually started using Office 365 to track some of our staff trainings, because it's a great way of getting it all in one place, and then you can manipulate the data. And I think we need to move some of our performance measurement stuff, you know, in there too. We're just figuring it all out. And, you know, we have KPI, we track a lot of stuff, but it's just really, it's not organized, and it's not in a great place right now. So I really appreciate all the information that you've shared today, because I'm getting some really good ideas. So thank you very much.
And I will say that, like, not to plug Microsoft or anything, but they do offer really competitive nonprofit pricing. I mean, some of the tools like BI is really affordable for nonprofits. So we've been able to leverage those sort of things to automate processes. I mean, we're 100 and something employees in an evaluation department of basically NOAA. So anything that we can do to automate helps. And Robin, to your point, I mean, we're a mid to large size organization, but the tools we use are mostly fairly affordable. I mean, outside of our EHR, but the majority of what we're doing in terms of evaluation comes out of Office 365 and BI.
Yeah, and I think they order quarterly, like free day long, like kind of crash courses in like Power BI. So they do have some interesting, I mean, certainly.
Does everyone know what Power BI
is? Oh, sorry. Yeah, Power BI is the business intelligence through Microsoft.
Okay.
So all of our dashboards are built off of the Power BI platform. And then we use SharePoint to share those with everybody so they can access them.
Yeah. So like some, you know, you can get fancy and automate things, but you can also like have a survey and like download it as an Excel file and then upload it into this program. And as long as you kind of get it there, it's like relative. I mean, you know, there's a learning curve, but it's not the most complicated thing as far as all this stuff goes. So it can be pretty accessible, I think.
And I only pay for 3 Power BI licenses. And then the rest of it is shared through the other ways throughout the platform. So it's not like you have to get everybody the license.
Mm-hmm.
What else are people doing?
So we have a lot of people here from Pittsburgh. We only heard from Sarah. Are you all in evaluation?
Portions different of your departments agency? Though. Everybody's different in a different department.
So do you all have different ways of measuring?
Our programs are very different. They're very unique. So I am coming from the service coordination program that focuses on working with immigrants and refugees. So with our service coordination clients, the clients will set their goals and will choose, the client is going to decide how they feel about their situation. So if they're stable, if they feel safe or unsafe. And that ranges from, you know, basic provisions, housing, healthcare, legal, depending on their need. Mm-hmm. That how they choose and how they categorize their situation will be assigned a number. And that's when they enrolled in service coordination. And then they do the same when they finish their service plan, when they leave the service, the program. And we do have in my program, we use Apricot. And then the reporting system will see how much, what was the grade change, you know, overall for our clients. So, you know, our clients who wanted help with housing, this is how they enter the program. This is how they exit the program. And our reporting will have that numeric, that information. What was the point change for our clients? And in comparison to other years as well as incorporating some individual client stories, challenges, successes.
Sounds good.
With Veronica's program that she's talking about, it is funded by the county, and it is actually a 6-agency program that JFCS runs lead on. So we aggregate that data from 6 other agencies as well, who are all inputting that data. So that data is not just our data. That data is pulled from 6 other agencies that are working in partnership to serve the immigrant and refugee community in Pittsburgh.
Do you get good results, good yes. outcomes?
Terrific. Yeah, it's over $1 million grant, and I think it's in its 6th or 7th year of okay. being renewed with JFCS as the lead. So, yeah, and then Jackie does interesting work working with unaccompanied minors and individuals who are trying to get status or status for their families.
Yeah. We have, my department, Immigration Legal Services, we've grown a lot in the last few years, which is great, but also suddenly like how we were tracking things before doesn't make sense, both with the way we've grown and also, you know, considering everything in the last year or so too. And we kind of have within our department, what is involved for the grant that we have to work with unaccompanied minors is very different from what's involved in other grants that we have to do things like citizenship, immigration services for refugees and their families. And then we have some kind of zip code specific grants as well. And they all have different requirements and they all have different types of cases that can be counted for them. And they're all reported on differently depending on, you know, who the funders are. So it's.
Yours is very specific.
Yeah, it's kind of been a challenge. I've been working a lot, especially in the last year, on figuring out a more streamlined way to get that data in so we can, you know, stay on top of the grants and know what's going on with them. But also use it for, you know, other things that we might want to show in the future, depending on other opportunities that come up. Or, you know, we also do some work with different departments as well. And sometimes the other department will just need to know pretty quickly, how many of these types of cases have you guys worked on? So yeah, trying to get everything in the same spot has been challenging, especially with everyone from home too. So I'm just really enjoying kind of hearing what other people are doing and taking some notes on things to talk to my supervisor about.
What system do you have a system? Are you like in Excel spreadsheets? Are you in like
We use Google, essentially Google Google Sheets for things mostly, Excel for other things. So that's, I think that's another one of the challenges that we have is what's accessible to everyone in the kind of on the different teams within our department.
They have federal grants that they have to report through federal, you know, places. They have county grants that have to be reported through county. So they've really struggled with finding one place that they can aggregate everything in.
Yeah, I commiserate. I mean, I used to make people dual enter. So they would have to enter it into like the city / state database, but then they'd also have to come over here and do it in our database. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that, what we've kind of been doing is... What we've kind of been doing is I kind of created something for my coworkers to fill out, and then I'll put it where it needs to go, which is fine. But you know, it'd be nice to have something that I guess more of us can have a handle on, you know.
I think Google has equivalent tools, I believe, that Microsoft does in terms of analytics.
Mm-hmm. I've that's been like a huge highlight for me in the last year, is getting to kind of stretch those muscles, I guess, and learn a lot more about how to play around with that stuff. So I have really been enjoying that. I don't know. I think there's still some other things that we're struggling to like have a uniform system for. That I'm hoping we'll be able to figure out soon.
Yeah, I mean, every time we come up with a new program or a new thing that we want to measure, it's, you know, I always have Noah in the back of my mind of like, is this one more spot that he's got to remember to pull into something else? Or can we really put this in the same spot as often as possible?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how successful we are at that. But
no, that's definitely, yeah, that's a common theme of what of when there's new something new to track, is there any possible way to fit it into our current construct that would give you what you need, even if it's a little less convenient?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think probably one of the other hard things is getting all of the staff to accept a new thing. I don't know. I think it's something you're always going to struggle with, but
yeah, totally. I mean, change management is hard. And, you know, I think, you know, we get good ideas and we want to act on them, but you also have to consider, you know, I just trained somebody on this other way and now I can't just pull that out and say, okay, no, I want to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So we try very hard to not change course all too often. I think, I mean, the move to Promise in and of itself was, I don't know if the staff saw as much of the pain in the shift of it, because it was actually reducing the amount of paperwork that they had to do, making less questions and more targeted questions. So in a sense, it worked. So I see we have about 5 minutes left. Does anyone have any ideas or thoughts on our next topic? Is there anything that you guys are really thinking about or struggling with?
Lisa, do you recall what the other winners are? I don't know if you have that on hand.
I can get it. I can look it up.
If not, I can go back to the survey and pick the next highest one on
the list. I have it. So we had the evaluation professionals. This is it. Top five topics. What was big here? Building evaluation capacity and staff data visualization. What did we say here? Hold on. Would you be willing to... Amanda, would you be willing to talk on it? I guess we can look at it again. But these are things that people said yes to: data tracking options, software solutions, building evaluation capacity and staff. People like that one. Data-informed decision-making. I think building evaluation capacity and staff had the most people interested.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic that we're kind of thinking through right now in terms of, you know, we've been pretty centralized in our evaluation department, but it would be nice if, you know, do we have a committee? Do we, you know, have champions in each department that really help us drive change in terms of evaluation, getting more acceptance and understanding of why we are asking to do the things that we're asking and getting people more excited about it.
People think that's an interesting topic. If not, we can just, you can look and see what the results were and then come
up with
something.
That's what we did. We developed a team with the leads in each area, and we got a little too excited and had to have people pull back a little bit because they got a little ambitious. But I think it would be interesting to play out the idea of the shared outcome as well, to keep that conversation going along with that.
You mean what the network could do?
But the network, you know, because I think
we could measure. What's one thing we could measure?
What's one thing we could measure? Because, exactly. I think that it also, you know, there's also this factor. I don't know how we could include this, but being a member of the network, how does that enhance your outcome in that area? And I think that would also add value, you know, as a membership. Thing also, you know, this shared learning, does that add to your ability? You know, I think the poverty challenge that we got the opportunity to participate in and how that's helping us in that area that we mentioned.
Just I like that idea. Okay, so we got a few ideas out of this, more things too.
Lisa, what does the network do in general in terms of evaluating itself?
Nothing. Not really. I mean, do we? I can't think of anything that we necessarily do.
You guys just sent out, you guys are helping with the surveys to collect data on like D&I stuff, right? Or how?
Yes, but that's not evaluating.
Not evaluating. Network. No, but it's collecting data on all the agencies.
Yes, yeah. We do that. But I thought you meant, is that what you meant, Paul? I thought you meant.
No, I was just curious if you guys do like any internal evaluation in terms of some of the things that Laura was talking about, like, but no, I was just curious. But you guys, I mean, I'm not saying.
We don't do any client satisfaction surveys, but potentially we should be doing something. I hear what Laura's saying, is the shared learning helping you? Those kinds of things. And what does that mean? And how can we leverage that to get more money from federations or wherever we're raising our money? Mm-hmm. Good ideas, more good ideas.
So the next one is?
July 28th.
July 28th, okay. So we'll be in touch in between now and then with the topic. And it's great to see everybody and thanks for your participation.
Thank you all, right? It was interesting.
Thank you.
Bye, Paul, bye Noah, bye. Thank you all, thank you everyone.